I will with Simon Brett. I want to assure you, Simon, that I will not reveal that the au pair did it.
Oh, good. I'm glad about that, because it would be dreadful for people who read it, who might not bother to get to the end.
That's absolutely true. Tell me about your hero now. You've already corrected my pronunciation, which was dreadful. I guess the Americans just somehow don't pronounce things right. So tell me exactly about the pronunciation of this heroine of yours and who she is.
Well, her name is Mrs. Pargiter. And she is the widow. It's never quite revealed who her husband was, but there are pretty heavy hints throughout the book that...
But he did have links to a guy who becomes a private detective.
Yes, he had links to a lot of people in the underworld, I think one would say. What he quite did is never defined, and he certainly kept her... I think she knew what was going on, but he never quite let her get involved in anything. So when he died, he left her extremely well-heeled, a lot of money, very nice taste, that kind of thing, in certain respects. She knows what she likes to eat, what she likes to drink. And he also left her this wonderful address book, which is all his contacts of his former life. So when she moves into becoming a sleuth detective, she has some rather useful resources, a sort of repertory of assistants from his former life, who have all gone straight now. None of them are any longer involved in anything criminal, but they can help her sort of trace missing persons or trace a missing vehicle or, as you say, one's a private detective, that kind of thing. So that is her basic setup.
Now, in Mrs. Presumed Dead, she moves into... not an unusual housing development. Tell me about that.
Well, it's a very... I'm sure you have equivalents in America. It's a very typical thing in England, which is the sort of upmarket executive estate where, you know, a plot of land is carved up into a number of different plots, and on these supposedly individual houses are built. But they're all, although they're not identical, they're all built very much in the same style, and they look very similar. And these are houses for the aspiring classes, you know, the people who are making a lot of money, kind of yuppies, I guess you'd say, but maybe a bit older than yuppies. Yuppies who've moved out of town. And so the husbands aren't really seen during the week. You know, they go off early in the morning because they work hard, and the cars come back at night. And really the book is about those hours while the men are away. So it's the women in the estate who are the subject of the book.
And, of course, there's the murder, more than one murder, in fact. But your heroine is somewhat different than the more benign heroines of Agatha Christie. Tell me about what she is like.
Yes, I think she's a little more... she's not quite so accepting as Miss Marple. I mean, she has her own standards, and she doesn't like pretension, and she's very happy to put people down, and she's totally unafraid, I think. I mean, she's afraid of real danger, but she's not afraid of people. So if, you know, people are being pretentious or annoying, she will let them know what she thinks in a very gentle way. So she's a kind of... And she's also slightly, not lower class, but she's not quite the genuine article. She's totally unworried by this. She has no social aspirations. But when you put her with absolutely no, you know, happy with what she is, in a society of people who are all trying to make themselves better than they are and trying to present themselves as socially superior to what they really are, obviously the fur is going to fly, and it does a bit.
Do you ever see the day when Mrs. Pratiger, am I pronouncing that correctly?
No, not Pratiger. Pargiter.
Pargiter. I'm going to... I will get this right on the air.
I have yet to meet an American who can pronounce it instinctively, so clearly it's not an American name. Pargiter.
No, it's a tough name for me. There's yeah. But do you ever see the day when Mrs. Pargiter, did I get that right?
Close to.
I'll forget it the next time. Do you ever see the day when she will team up with Charles Perris?
I don't think so, because their circles are very different, actually. I mean, I love writing about both of them, and I hope to continue writing about both of them, but I think they'll always be in separate books, because it's not just the fact that their social circles are different. There's a kind of difference, so far as I'm concerned, in the almost the level of reality between them. I mean, I think Charles Perris lives in a very real theatrical milieu. And with Mrs. Pargiter, although the backgrounds are real, there's something slightly heightened about them. And it's interesting, when I write the books, they come out in a completely different pace. You know, like the Mrs. Pargiter's come out in shorter chapters, which may not sound much, but it's somehow a difference in attitude when you sit down to write something. And there's a sort of natural length for a chapter in a Charles Perris book. and the natural length in a Mrs. Pargeter book is about a third of the Charles Parris length, and I can't explain that, but it's something, you know, they're very different projects so far as I'm concerned.
Of course, you're dealing with a different type of character. You have Robley as a man, one involved in, you were involved in BBC, weren't
yes,
you?
Yes,
so
for
you,
10 years.
Yeah, so... you probably have more in common with Charles Parris, and it's probably easier for you to get into under his skin.
Maybe, yes, though I do. I mean, I'm surprised how easy I find it to write about women. I write a situation comedy series in England called After Henry, which is about three women. And I do enjoy writing about women. And, I mean, obviously, as a writer, you never know, except from the reaction you get from other people. But women have told me that I do write quite accurately about them, which is kind of encouraging.
What's Charles Parris up to these days?
Charles Parris is... Well, there's another book coming here in the fall called A Series of Murders, in which he gets involved in a television production based on the works of a living crime writer, elderly but living, and he plays the sort of thick sidekick in the television series. You know, there's always, like, Albert Campion has Lug, I think. I think he's called Lug. And Charles Parris plays a character called Sergeant Clump, who's a regular in this series. So it's all the disasters that can happen on television series, which I know a certain amount about because I have been a producer and I'm now involved in writing for television. So once again, this lovely thing that happens is that my own experience is sort of fed back into the books, and sometimes even unpleasant experiences are expiated through the books, though I must confess that I've never been involved in a murder in television.
Until now, of course.
Until now, and maybe after what I've just said, when I go back, something nasty will happen to me.
My God, Simon, all these books, when will it end?
Well, I hope certainly not before my death, which I hope will be some time off. But no, I mean, I have enormous fun writing them, so I'm going to go on as long as I can. And I'm not one of those writers who has the sort of Reichenbach Falls relationship with his creations. I'm not going to kill them. You know, I'm far too fond of them, both Mrs. Pargeter and Charles Parris, to do that. So they're going to be around for a long time, I hope.
Well, this is your... second book now with your female hero, right?
Yes, second Mrs. Pargeter, and A Series of Murders in the Fall will be the 13th Charles Parris. So she's got some catching up to do.
13?
Mm-hmm. That's right, yes. And a couple of other one-off mysteries I've done. So, yes, the tally is building up.
Yes. Well, what's it like over in England? They must really love your stuff, huh?
Yes, the reaction is pretty good. I think it's maybe even better here. I'm never quite sure. I mean, it's encouraging both sides at the moment.
Well, of course, I put you on the spot. They hate your stuff, right?
No, they think it's terrific. I'm sorry, I must remember the American approach is to be positive. This self-effacing British approach doesn't count. Yes, they're terrific books, which people appreciate enormously.
Well, we talk about styles of mystery. Certainly, your style of mystery, I guess, is more on the Agatha Christie style. You're certainly not a hard-boiled writer. What's the difference between hard-boiled and Agatha Christie, anyway?
Well, I was amazed and amused to discover a few years back that my books are categorised over here as British cosies. I'm a British cosy author. I guess the hard-boiled, I mean, the violence is more real. It tends to be grittier, if you like. You know, there's more violence. And also some very, very good writing. I mean, I suppose Raymond Chandler, Dashiell Hammett started the hard-boiled school, where the death and the violence are important, but it's the style which is, I think, the most important. And there are still some wonderful practitioners of that. I mean, Elmore Leonard is certainly in that tradition, and Lauren D. Estelman, people like that. I can't think of an English writer who has really succeeded in that vein, except, of course, Raymond Chandler himself, who, don't let us forget, was English, though he wrote over here. It's something...
Oh, I'm sorry, was Chandler English?
Yes, he was English. Yes, he was born and brought up in England, and he went to the same school as I did, Dulwich College. That's interesting, isn't it? But no, I mean, he lived all his life in America, but he was English by birth. So somehow the English haven't been good at doing that, and I don't know what the reason is, but what we have always been good at doing is the kind of, well, cozy, if you like, you know, the more domestic murder, the sort of murder where, yes, someone gets killed, but it's not so that there's blood and brains scattered all over the room, it's so that it becomes an intellectual challenge to the detective to find out what happened. I think that has always been our strength in English crime writing. And the American strength has always been this wonderful stylistic sort of poetry of violence, if you like, which is the hard-boiled tradition.
Yeah, do the British like to read the hard-boiled stuff?
Oh, yes, yes, they're enormously popular and getting more popular. I mean, one of Macmillan's in England have recently started a series of American hard-boiled, which have been very successful. Yes, they're very popular.
Is there a community of crime writers in England, as there is here? They have all sorts of clubs, like the American Mystery Writers Association, and they have banquets and this sort of thing. Is there something like that in England?
Very definitely, yes. There's the Crime Writers Association, of which I was chairman a couple of years ago, which meets once a month, and we all get together and moan about publishers. No, and I mean, have a good time. It's mostly a social club. And there are one or two other organizations. There's a wonderful thing called the Detection Club, which has only 50 members, and it just meets three times a year to have a dinner, which is great fun. And one of the dinners, there is an initiation ceremony for new members where they have to lay their hand on Eric the Skull and state various strange vows, and then they become members of the Detection Club. And that's great, because actually crime writers seem to be a very, I don't know what the word is, clubbable kind of writer. You know, that I've yet to meet a crime writer I dislike. I mean, they seem to be very benign people. And I think perhaps it's very simple Freudian psychology. You know, if you spend your day killing people on paper, you can actually be quite nice to them in the evening.
Yeah, well, you're right, and you're one of the most affable people I've met. But when you think about the act of murder in real life, the act of murder, and God knows with the drug crisis that exists in the United States, there is murder all the time. And you wonder about the impact of murder, that terrible act, the taking of a life. And yet, we read books and we love them. We love to talk to mystery writers. We have associations. Why is it? Why is it murder so violent? So, not violent. We know it's violent, but so foul, so awful. And yet, we find ourselves making in light of it in a fictional way.
I think it's partly that the fictional form is very contained. You know, in other words, the murder is not going to spill off the pages into your living room, which is one thing. And also, it's a very moral genre, because it's comforting in that sense, that most murder mysteries start with a murder, and at the end, through all kinds of hoops and twists and turns, you find out who did it, and justice is done. And of course, in the old days, in the English murder, the perpetrator, then, you know, went to the hangman and was killed, so justice was done very thoroughly. And I think that is kind of a comforting moral fable. And in a way, the worse real violence on the streets becomes, the more people will curl up with mysteries in which right is right, and wrong is wrong, and right will inevitably triumph. I think that's, I mean, obviously, one writes much more subtly than that. You know, you vary the moral sort of shading. But ultimately, I think, in most mysteries, justice is done, which it isn't always in real life.
Yeah, that's true. Well, Simon Brett, you are a mystery writer, and in Britain, they have outlawed the death penalty. In the United States, there's a great debate over the death penalty, and indeed, in most of the United States, it is not allowed. Some states permit the death penalty. What is your view, and what should the mystery writer's view be of the death penalty for murderers? God knows you guys deal with murderers every time you write a book.
Yes, I think that's down to the individual mystery writer. I mean, I don't think we can sort of have a stand as a body, because it's a matter of individual conscience. I mean, I am very strongly opposed to the death penalty. That's my personal view, just because I don't think we have the right to take human life, and we don't have the right to do it by murder, and I don't think we do by, you know, legal forms. But I know a lot of people disagree, and that's a point of view. I mean, I would fight strongly, not to the point of killing someone, I hope, but to keep the death penalty out.
But even in England, there's a debate, isn't it? It seems to me I read something just a short while ago. There, a lot of people want it back.
Oh, sure, an enormous, I mean, possibly even a majority of the country. I'm not sure of that. But yes, it's a very large number who do. As I say, I mean, I don't agree with them. But yes, a lot of people would like to see it back. I think it's a very strong human instinct for revenge. You know, somebody perpetrates a crime, particularly if it's against someone you know, and your instinct is you want them paid back. I mean, it's an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I have a feeling one should be able to ride above that morally and take an overview and say, no, that is not the way to do it. You know, that may incite more violence or...
I agree with you, and I think that our murder and violence should be left to the printed page where we can thoroughly analyze it and enjoy it and see it for what it shouldn't be. Mrs. Presumed Dead, another terrific book from Simon Brett. Thank you very much.
Thank you.